Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Planning Commission work session for Thursday, March 7th, 2024 at 4 p.m. I hereby call this work session to order. First item of business is determination of a quorum. We presently have five commissioners here, which indeed makes for a quorum. Next order of business is adoption of the agenda. Do I hear a motion to adopt this afternoon's agenda?
I move that we adopt the agenda as presented.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Next order of business is the election of a vice chairman. Since nobody is jumping up and down, I'll go ahead and make a, I would like to nominate Jeremy Dickman for vice chairman. I feel that he's got the experience and the temperament and all the qualifications to be a very great vice chairman.
Sounds good. I would second that.
Well, is there any other nominations before we move into motions?
Sounds pretty good to me.
And I should probably ask Jeremy if something that would be interested in accepting.
Yeah, I can do that. Sure.
Oh, cool. All right. Thank you. Appreciate you stepping up.
Yeah.
So I make a motion to have Jeremy Dickman be our new vice chair. And can you guys confirm the duration of that term? Is it a 2-year term? Maybe typically it is.
So it's typically, we've been doing it every year, but the actual enabling ordinance says it's done, I think, every 2 years.
Okay.
So we would be, I think we're going to, we skipped it this year. And so we'll start to, it'll be up through January of 2025. And then we'll revote again.
Okay.
Back to new chair and vice chair.
Well, I second that.
Well, let me make a motion first.
And, I thought you moved already. Sorry.
So I hereby make a motion to have Jeremy be the vice chair for the duration of the term. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Motion passes. Congratulations.
Thank you, Jeremy.
No idea what you signed up for.
Nope.
Yeah.
No idea what I'm doing.
Moving along, we'll go to visitor communication. This is the time provided for individuals wishing to address the Planning Commission regarding issues not already on this afternoon's agenda. And it looks like we've got David Bochtel.
Well, I was going to speak regarding the time
that. Okay, perfect. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak on anything that's not on this afternoon's agenda?
But I have to pull this up. No,
sorry, you don't. It's okay.
Perfect. And do you have something that you'd like to share with us that's not on the agenda today? Okay. If you'd like to go ahead and take the podium. And just state your name and address for the record, please.
Sorry for the scribbles.
That's okay.
Zenia Kuzma, 914 East Horseback Trail in Sisters. And I just wanted to speak on the urban growth boundary. You know, it's double what people expected it was going to be. And it was for affordable housing. That was the mission and the purpose. And 30% of that is only attributed to affordable housing, not all. So I don't know if a lot of people know that. And I think it should be made clear that only 30% of that will be attributed to affordable housing. And what's by the airport is in the urban growth boundary, but it's not 30%. So we're taking something in the growth boundary that's not 30% contributing to the earth growth boundary, which is 260 acres. And I don't think it's a fair call. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else from the audience that would like to speak? Okay. Moving along, we'll go ahead and jump right into the work session. I'll turn it over to staff.
Thank you, Chair Seymour. Matthew Martin, City of Sisters Community Development Department. Good evening or afternoon, commissioners, and those in attendance tonight, and excuse me, in the room and perhaps online. Let me get myself oriented as I bring up my presentation for the work session. And noting that we are here for a workshop in preparation for a public hearing that's scheduled for March 21st to consider some applicant-initiated text amendments to the Sisters Development Code, in particular chapters 1.3 definitions and 2.7 Sun Ranch Tourist Commercial District. Emphasizing again that this is an applicant-initiated proposal in that the typical text amendments or legislative changes that come before you are initiated by city staff. And in that, there is typically an extensive work session or workshop process to introduce and develop code language and consider analysis of data, as you may have most recently with the dark skies ordinance or the short-term rental code amendments, among others, that it's a detailed process where we really rely on you to develop the actual application. In this case, as an applicant-initiated project, there's not that workshop process that would be as part of the project, but rather relying on the applicant with the burden of proof to show that the amendments meet the applicable comprehensive plan and development code standards. So with that, acknowledging that tonight's workshop is just some table setting in preparation for the public hearing to give you the foundation of understanding the details of the properties involved, the sections of code that are involved, and answer any questions I can at this point to prepare or understand what additional information you may be interested in to present that at the public hearing that's forthcoming. So happy to answer any questions along the way. This presentation and my comments today are intended to be in support of the staff report that I provided in advance of today's meeting. That included a brief overview of the project as well as the application materials. Prior to the public hearing, the full project record will be presented to the Planning Commission that is available up and to the public hearing, in addition to any testimony that's presented at the public hearing itself. So, we're talking about the tourist commercial district. It's a small district located in the northeast portion of town, located in proximity to the Sisters Eagle Air Airport. It was or is approximately a little over 6 acres in area. It comprises a total of 3 parcels. However, that's limited to the entirety of 1 lot. And a southern portion of 2 lots that are to the north of that lot number one that's identified in the image. Acknowledge that it's a small district, clearly, that it only covers 3 properties. And so really, when we're talking about the scope of any amendments, it's involving clearly a limited number of parcels and limited development impacts, so it's not a holistic change to a larger residential district or commercial district, but rather this small pocket or node. This district was developed in conjunction with what's more broadly identified as the Sun Ranch development area. Was approved in 2007 by the City Council, which created the Sun Ranch Residential District, which is to the north of this area, as well as the North Sisters Business Park, originally named Sun Ranch Industrial District, but rather that was changed with the expansion of the business park to properties to the west. I just wanted to give you some orientation on the timeline. The intent was of the original concentration of districts was to provide employment lands within the business park, residential lands for housing units that are in close proximity and perhaps in conjunction with employees that work within the business district, and then create a smaller commercial pocket that provided commercial opportunities such as dining, retail, and tourist accommodations in conjunction with this new enclave of types of and I guess node of town that had the three different distinct districts, but also acknowledging that the intent of the tourist commercial district was to have limited commercial opportunities rather than the preceding general commercial district that was the zone designation of this particular area that would have afforded the wide variety of commercial uses that are allowed in what are now our highway commercial or downtown commercial. Also want to note for background information that the current purpose of the tourist commercial district, acknowledging one that the applicant is proposing to change the text of the purpose statement, but generally within the same intent that the current purpose statement implies. But I just wanted to highlight that currently the intent is to provide lodging, dining, and recreational destinations and gathering places for commercial properties, commercial uses, and provide a flexibility for expansion of lodging facilities and having accessory uses, including meeting facilities, restaurants, bars, neighborhood market, and similar accessory uses. I wanted to highlight that because, again, what's before you are amendments to the tourist commercial district as it is today. This is not an opportunity, again, because it's applicant initiated, that to one example be, I think this should be a residential district or more employment lands. That's not what's before you today is a wholesale revision to the district, but rather what one could characterize as refinement of the district to reflect changing conditions within the community and within the tourist commercial, or excuse me, the tourist industry as described by the applicant in their proposal. So the proposal itself, again, relying on the applicant's application materials to provide the details for each one of these, but we can certainly drill down a bit farther. In the definition chapter of 1.3, the applicants proposed to create a definition of lodging establishment. This definition is to be a relatively encompassing of the variety of lodging establishments that we may have, including hotels, motels, hostels, and others. This is a reflection of our code does not have such a kind of general definition of those overnight transient accommodations. And throughout, we use the different terminology from hotel and motel and lodging to reflect this same use. So the idea is to be more consistent and have a shared definition. Again, the applicant has proposed to update the purpose statement to more reflect their identified intent of the district, but also accommodate those uses that are proposed, but also the intent of the purpose of the district as it stands today. I think the broader go ahead.
For clarification for me, that defining the term lodging establishment, that will affect the entire city, is that correct? Not just this little small district.
Correct. It would be applicable to all aspects of the city or the development code. And so while we may have this encompassing definition of lodging establishment, that would not mean that if this were adopted, that say in our downtown commercial district that allows for hotel, that would not be supersede and prohibit a hotel, but but complimentary at this point.
Thank you.
I think the most prominent aspects of the changes include additional permitted uses that go beyond what's allowed there specifically today to incorporate lodging establishment, a hostel, RV park, including caretaker residence and park. Do want to note that within the district now, lodging facilities is a permitted use. And that's another emphasis of why having a definition is important. Lodging facilities is an allowed use, but not defined in our code. So it remains ambiguous. So while the intent may have been to allow a hotel as a lodging facility, that ambiguity of that term leaves room for interpretation. So again, this provides that clarity.
I have a question, Matt.
Yeah.
When you're saying RV park, is there going to be further definition of that? Is it for overnight stays, or can it be like the one across from Pipelines where people could stay there for years?
Yeah. So within our code, we do have a definition of recreational vehicle or RV park, and then specific use standards for RV parks, but neither one, the definition or the specific use standards have a limitation or a cap on duration of stay. With that,
I would just note that it does say in the definition is designated or meant for temporary use, but it doesn't define what temporary means.
Thank you for that
clarification. Yeah, temporary could be 5 years, 2 years, month.
So certainly part of this conversation as part of the review process and recommendation that you provide forward. Looking to remove specifically listed accessory uses that are in the tourist commercial district. What's in there now today are saunas, laundry establishments, multi-use trails and paths. This is the changes are more efficient application of the code rather than specifically listing accessory uses that are allowed. As is typical with other districts, use categories, standalone use categories, accessory uses. And so that allows a discretion of identifying what those accessory subordinate uses that are established in conjunction with a particular use. So if you were to establish a hotel on this property, as just an example, that project could include multi-use trails, the laundry facility, or other a restaurant, things like that may be incorporated within that hotel, but not specifically called out. So this is allows just more efficient descriptions of the uses within the district, and again, this consistent formatting with the majority of the code. Again, working through the summary here, removes the special use standards for neighborhood market, laundry establishment, and cottages. So with the removal of that, we would be relying on our general standards for either, again, laundry establishment being accessory to a hotel or RV park. The neighborhood market is a defined term and a defined use, and specific use standards. So those would apply to such a use if it were proposed. And then falling back on our specific site plan review and design standards for any commercial project. So within the tourist commercial district is unique that it has its specific design criteria and aesthetic within the tourist commercial district that is a 1900s ranch or rural farmhouse design. Again, emphasizing that that's specific to just these three properties, whereas elsewhere the Western design theme is applicable to the commercial districts. The applicants proposing to remove that specific design theme, thereby making the Western design theme applicable to any commercial development within the tourist commercial district. some changes to the setback requirements that were more perhaps more restrictive than other commercial districts or to specific uses. And then lastly, in the application materials, you may see in the track changes where we look to the strike through for removal of criteria and underline of addition. You'll see a lot of changes there, but really that's just to provide a more consistent format that is reflective of the majority of our chapters within the development code. So just so that it looks similar, it functions similar to the other districts. This kind of format that you see within the tourist commercial district is what you'll see in other Sun Ranch districts. And so that's where that format came from, but is not applied to other districts. Any questions about that general overview at this point, but certainly later is available.
So some of the changes are for the entire basically city, and some of the changes are just for tourist commercial.
The one change that's entire citywide or applicable citywide is the definition of lodging establishment. Whereas the other changes are specific to the tourist commercial district.
Curious, Matt, does the current tourist commercial that we're looking at here, are RV parks currently in that zone?
No. So this would be an additional use that would be is being contemplated.
Okay. And what is the current zone that does allow RV parks?
I would want to double check for certainty. I know that it's the open space. Well, I want to make sure that I get that right. So once I can close down my presentation, I can go back to that question and check on the code.
Thanks.
I believe it's limited. Well, I'm going to begin to guess, but open space conservation or open space zone and the highway commercial, I know of two that allow. But we can get that for certainty. Other questions? Okay. Certainly open for questions as we as I close out my presentation.
I have a question.
Sure.
So when it talks about defining lodging establishments, so then if I'm correct, if I'm understanding you, would there then be a definition for this is the definition of a hotel? This is the definition of a motel. This is the definition of a bed and breakfast. This is the definition of an RV park. And then it would list how you qualify to be an RV park or a hotel or a motel.
So to touch on those, hotel or motel are not defined in Sisters Development Code currently.
But I got that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Whereas RV park and bed and breakfast have specifically defined terms. So yeah, there is that outlier of an undefined term. So that's when we rely on general definitions. We look to the dictionary to.
So my question then is: so if it calls for defines lodging establishments and RV park, then becomes a lodging establishment. Then would we have criteria for being an RV park?
So this lodging establishment does not incorporate RV park as part of the definition. So to read it here is any hotel, motel, resort, building, or structure that is used to provide sleeping accommodations to the public for charge. Also recognizing that RV park has its separate definition, so we'd be relying on that. Right. And then also noting that there are specific criteria for RV parks. Outside of the tourist commercial district. So if anywhere that it's allowed proposal would come in, it would be subject to those specific use standards. Which is a nice segue to emphasize and for the commission as well as the public at large that for most land uses that are identified in this district and many of the commercial uses, well, most, if not all, commercial uses in the city are subject to land use review. And so if this proposal is approved and then adopted by the city council, there would be subsequent land use review required. And so I want to emphasize that as part of that review, we're looking for compliance with not only the district standards, but also our site plan review standards that incorporate the findings that there's adequacy of the public facilities, transportation, safe circulation of vehicles, pedestrians, bicycles, considerations of noise, visual impacts, as well as other standards there. Also our design standards that incorporate landscaping, minimum parking and bicycle parking standards, among other public improvements. And then because RV Park is prominent and has been identified publicly as a potential use on the property, just wanted to highlight that above and beyond those general site plan and design standards, that there are specific use standards that apply to RV parks that consider internal circulation and roadways, the provision of trash receptacles, adequacy of parking, restrooms, and screening of the RV park itself. So in closing, just thinking about next steps, again, highlighted the public hearing is scheduled for your next meeting on March 21st. We'll provide a staff report that provides a full analysis of the proposal in consideration of the applicable provisions of the city's comprehensive plan and our legislative amendment processes. And we'll kind of really scrutinize the details of the proposed text amendments and provide you some feedback on where staff's position are on the adequacy or perhaps some other recommendations to consider for revision or refinement of those standards. Because recognizing that, again, that this is a legislative process versus a quasi-judicial development review process. So when you have a site plan come before you, such as the Space Age gas station, or a master plan such as Sunset Meadows, you're really relying on and limited to those development review criteria. And it's not an opportunity to really amend or change a project, but rather does that project meet the code standards or not? This being a legislative change, there is a bit more latitude and providing an opportunity for you to, in your recommendation to the city council, to incorporate aspects of the proposal or the uses or standards that you may find more accommodating or palatable for incorporation into the code. So keep that in mind, that there's more flexibility with this process than perhaps others. And then just highlighting for the good of the order that following the public hearing, Planning Commission provides a recommendation that is then forwarded to the City Council for consideration. A subsequent public hearing is required to be held before the City Council, where additional opportunity for testimony is there. And then finally, City Council renders the final local decision through adoption of an ordinance. So that's the extent of my comments, but I'm happy to kind of drill down on some details that you may have questions about or other comments, Scott.
Thanks, Matt. I just wanted to follow up with and just reemphasize, I think what you've already said is just, and also for the benefit of the public who may be here interested in this subject, is, you know, this is just a work session. It's intended to be entirely informational only, just questions for clarification by the Planning Commission to the staff to make sure you guys understand the proposal so you can adequately review it when it comes back for a public hearing on the 21st. And so it's not the intent of this forum to be an opportunity to start deliberating on the merits of the proposal. And I think it's kind of up to the chair, I think, whether or not we want to entertain any public comment on it because of not wanting to get into discussing the merits of the case at this point, and knowing that there's plenty of opportunity both at the public hearing on the 21st and with City Council for public comment on that. But I'll leave it up to the chair to decide if we want to take comment today or not. And then I just wanted to briefly address, I don't think I followed up completely followed. We completely followed up on your question, Commissioner Blumenkron, about the Sisters RV park and what the differences might be, whereas that looks like an RV park, but is long-term. It's a different zoning. That's a residential zoning. And there, I was just reading up on it, I guess, on some of the background, but it was looked at differently through the land use process. So the allowance for those spaces to be used on a long-term basis was built into the approval. And that was because, partly because of what the use was before it was annexed, and partly because of what the zone underlying zoning is, residential as opposed to this site, which is tourist commercial, which would not allow typically long-term tenancy, although the definition of temporary could be disputed in our definition. So just wanted to clarify why that looks like something different over there.
We'll have a chance to refine some of the definitions as well.
Certainly this is an opportunity to do so if the commission wanted to go in that direction.
I had a question on it's a combination of three different lots, and one of the lots, does it the northeastern lot, does that include that building that now has the distillery in it?
I'll have Matt address
that. Or does it stop before it gets to the distillery?
The distillery is located within the tourist commercial district.
Okay.
Yeah, and was reviewed as that allowed use as a distillery.
No, so, but I mean, is that?
Yeah. So brought up the map. So the distillery, the facility is located within the district on that southern portion of that lot.
But is it within lot two is what my question is.
The distillery is within lot two.
Thank you. That helps.
Is there a conflict or a contradiction in that the auto dependent uses are prohibited, but then we're going to allow recreational vehicle uses in that zone? I don't know if the philosophy behind not wanting auto dependent uses in a given zone then conflicts with, but we're going to allow RVs. Do we have, like, was there I guess that's my entire question. Sorry.
I think that's for consideration by the commission. As from staff's opinion, the auto dependent uses are those. So we're talking about the parking of vehicles, yeah, and any use that incorporates people coming to their site with a vehicle that does, you know, that could be construed by some that that's auto dependent because of scale or other. But the staff's opinion is that auto dependent are those uses that involve the or designed for solely for the use of a vehicle to access that that business, drive through, auto mechanic, gas station, uses like that. The sole reason that a vehicle is required to come to this site is not. Well, staff's opinion is that it's not different than a hotel itself, that if you're an overnight accommodation, sure, you're driving a vehicle there to be here temporarily. But that certainly can be part of the discussion.
Okay.
Did we ever determine what the current zone is that allows RV parks?
What we
so
before I close my presentation, I just want to highlight for the commission and the public that we've created a website specific to this project that's incorporated in the City of Sisters website, The address is included in the presentation tonight, but with it being a lengthy address, I just wanted to note that go to the City of Sisters website, the subpage of community development, and then under notable projects, you'll find this project with a description of the project, a schedule, and then the entirety of the record. So, okay. So I'll stop sharing and we'll do some quick searching. So this is a
so I've got questions and comments, and mainly I'm a little bit concerned about our process here. Matt, when you get a chance, could you put the proposal back up? And, you know, in my time on the commission, I've never experienced, at least that I can remember, an applicant that is not the City of Sisters initiating code changes. And that's new, and I'm not sure how I feel about that.
A little bit of a conflict of interest sometimes.
Typically, the path by which a applicant accomplishes their project, if the land that they are currently wanting to do their project on is not allowing for their use, their intended use, but there's a different zone that allows for that, you typically go through a zone change rather than changing the rules. I mean, that's been historically the way that it's been done. So I got to kind of wrap my head around this. And the other thing is, it's not clear to me exactly what we are changing the language to. It's somewhat vague at this point. And what I've always enjoyed about our work sessions are that staff has historically gotten feedback from us, the language is then created and then brought to us in a work session whereby we can discuss it additionally. And then once there is, for the most part, consensus, then it's brought to a hearing. But I feel like this is somewhat rushed, and I'm a little concerned that we're not giving the changes that are being proposed enough scrutiny. I think there's enough questions that I'm not in favor of having this get pushed to our next meeting as a hearing. I think it warrants, you know, think about the code changes that we did the last time around. I mean, that took time. And as a result, we got probably the best product put through. And I think that's what our job is. And, you know, I think to best represent the public and the public's best interests, there should be a defined process by which we go about doing this. And I'm not saying that this is wrong or bad. I'm just saying that this is not the traditional way that we've done it in the past. And I think it just warrants discussion.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It's a fine distinction between changing a zone and changing the definition of the zone in the code. Like, it seems like if you're changing a particular parcel to a different zone, okay, at least that's a zone that we're familiar with because it's a zone in the city. If you're changing the wording of the zone, then you're affecting not only that zone but and that parcel, but other parcels that are zoned that way. And it's a little, you know, we have to consider the impact of future developments within that zone in the city allowing these changes.
This is the only place in the city that has that. 6.2 acres is the only part of the city that's zoned like this. It's a unique zone.
Is it, are we not changing the
some of the definitions?
The only thing that's getting changed though is lodge and establishment is going to be affected, you know, the entire code. But rest of what we're talking about, just 6.2 acres, that unique zone.
But if lodging is changed to include, an RV park,
But lodging isn't an RV park. They stated that it was an RV park. That's a separate thing. Lodging establishments, hotels, motels, hostels, bed and breakfasts. And there's a definition in today's packet that says, again, you read it, any building that houses somebody overnight. That was real rough definition that I did there. But if you could read that definition again, possibly, of establishment.
I think this speaks to wanting to see the details, spend more time looking at the details before we push forward.
Is it harder to apply for a zone change than it is to, I mean, I guess they're both type 4, to apply for a zone change or to apply for changes to the code? So I'm just wondering if we're setting a precedent here by creating a specific zone that only exists for these 6.2 acres, if that's what it is.
But it's already created. That zone's already there. We're talking about rewording some of that zone. And a lot of it was to clean up that language so it matched better with the city's code base. Is that correct? Is that what I read in the packet? A lot of it is to address the alignment with our current code.
You mean in terms of format?
Right, formatting. And
That was one, I think it's a byproduct of the application, is it's an opportunity to clean up the what is kind of a unique format for our code and kind of make it flow similar to all of our other zone districts, I think is one component of it. It's not the primary thrust of it, obviously.
So recognizing that it's a unique and rare process, well, I shouldn't say unique, but rather rare, acknowledging that the Sun Ranch districts that I highlighted, tourist commercial, the residential district, as well as the North Sisters Business Park, were an applicant-initiated project. And we do have other precedent of text amendments that were applicant-initiated. I understand that perhaps the concern that there's hasn't been adequate time to really digest the scope of the amendments. But also need to acknowledge that this is an applicant bringing these forward instead of city or staff bringing forward amendments for consideration, where we have that extensive process of identifying the criteria, refining the criteria and standards, but rather this is an evaluation of an applicant's proposal to change the. I just wanted to make those comments.
Yeah, thank you.
When you consider a rezone, you also got to consider that if you're rezoning it to another zone, you're opening it up to a whole host of other uses that may not be appropriate for this location. Is one reason for considering a proposal for a text amendment instead. It's unusual, but it's not unprecedented in my experience to see an applicant bring forward a text amendment is under consideration. If it doesn't pass muster, it doesn't get approved. But oftentimes these things can make sense, and they're maybe a result of an oversight or a change in circumstances that a planning commission or council may want to consider in terms of refinement to a particular text or zone district standards or allowed uses. So we can certainly take more time as many work sessions as we need. We don't want to rush this in either. If you guys aren't at a position where you're ready to take it forward, so that's always an option. It does get challenging, though. It's different than a city initiated one, where there's more free form discussion. I think that's what your point is, Chair Seymour, that we have the ability to kind of, before it goes to a public hearing, we have a lot of time. Massage it and have discussions before it gets to that point. And this one's a little bit different.
I guess the underlying fact that we're looking to change the code, I think there's actually more similarities than differences. And I think the same amount of scrutiny should be had, just because it's a private applicant versus a municipal applicant. It doesn't change the fact that the code is looking to be changed. So, I mean, I guess I would like to see, you know, I'm just looking at what the summary says with the proposed text amendments. I'd like to see concrete language as to what we're, and I know that that's going to be in the application, but, you know, I feel strongly that there just needs to be additional review in a work session, but that's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
So you mean seeing the concrete language in a work session before we have the public hearing?
Yeah, you know, when the city is the applicant, that's what happens.
Right. Yeah.
And when it comes to the code, regardless of whom the applicant is, I believe that it should be consistent. We're being asked to make a recommendation to change the code that potentially has ramifications that we can't even consider right now. We don't know what could potentially happen. I think it warrants us taking a good hard look at it.
Yeah, I support your position. I understand that. It's kind of confusing to me too.
So is there, just to make sure I understand, their interest in really walking through the scope of the changes in more detail at work session to really understand that more? Because I'll take responsibility for the establishing the format of tonight's work session and really just providing a general overview instead of really outlining the details of what's being proposed in the application.
Yeah, looking at each code change and discussing it in a work session first is probably a good idea.
Concerned about discussion because that could lead to or be construed as deliberations prior to a public
hearing. Well, we need to be able to ask questions.
Specific items. You know, and that's
where this is tricky because you have a private applicant versus a public applicant.
I think those discussions could happen if you're comfortable enough to take it to a public hearing. There's presents the opportunity to hear the public comment, hear the applicant's presentation, take it all in, and then you can deliberate through that process. If you need more time, you can take more time, continue it and take more time. So you can, it's kind of a different way of getting at what you're trying to get at it. It's kind of having that discussion within the public hearing versus how we do it with city initiated ones, where we have free form discussions at work sessions before it ever gets to a public hearing. And that has advantages, but I think because it's applicant initiated, it's only applies to a few lots, that it almost kind of puts it in the quasi judicial kind of environment where it should be done in a public hearing format. I think the recommendation that we heard from our legal counsel last meeting in terms of how we might be treating this legislative amendment differently than we would one that applies citywide, given that it only applies to three parcels. So that's an option if you're comfortable pushing it forward into that realm.
Is the proposed language changes, the track changes that was in the package that you guys sent out? Did I read that as
It is. And to that note, staff did acknowledge that or identify that the original application materials didn't appear to be consistent between the track changes version and the final clean version. And staff reached out to the applicant, and they have since supplemented the application and provided a printed copy as well as electronic copy to you of an updated version. That is consistent from the track changes to the clean. So those would be the amendments that are before you today. So or not are, today, excuse me, with this proposal.
But those amendments are in Exhibit A that you guys sent to us last week. Is that right? And for the package for today's meeting. I just want to make sure I have what I think
right.
I have.
The most current is the printout that I provided for you today at this meeting. Is the applicant's effort to clarify and provide consistent exhibits.
far as setbacks go, am I reading correctly that it's changing from a Barclay Drive or Camp Polk Road 20-foot setback to no setback? Is that for rear and side yard? Is that, am I reading that correctly?
That is changing to no side or rear setback. However, front yard setbacks are those drawn from those lot lines adjacent to streets.
Okay.
Do any other commissioners have any additional questions for staff? All right, I'm inclined to open it up. We've got a small audience and folks that would like to say something. So I'm going to open it up to public comment. There won't be any questions being asked from the commissioners, but we are here to listen. So I would go ahead and invite David Bochtel first, please.
Yeah.
Come on up to the podium and please state your name and address for the record.
Okay.
It's right over there. Okay. Yep.
David Bochtel, 1310 West Hill Avenue in Cicero. I'll kind of keep my comments limited here. First of all, with respect to confusion about definitions, I think it's useful to look at the development code and paragraph 1.3.100 says meaning of words generally. Webster's third new international district of English language under bridge addiction, blah, 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 sets the definitions. And so if it's defined there, there's no need to redefine it again unless your definition is different than what's in Webster's. Webster's does define hotels. Webster's does define motels. You've defined a recreational vehicle park, which by the way, in your definition is, quote, two or more recreational vehicles located on one lot and as permitted by the underlying zoning district. That's what it is. So now if you're looking at the zoning rules, maybe it's defined differently in there, but in terms of what's in the development code, that's what it is. I think with respect to lodging, there's an implication that RVs are the same as lodging. And I think I just happened to get on the internet and do a little searching around and, you know, you can go to the Oregon Health Authority, the state of Oregon, trying to figure out what these differences are at the state level. And well, there's a fundamental difference between lodging and RVs. And that is lodging includes is a structure with a room, and associated with that is some type of, you know, people come, they stay for a short amount of time, they leave, there are maids, there's service involved in changing bedding and those types of things. If it's a hostel, for example, they provide a breakfast, but they don't provide anything else. Hotels can provide breakfast, lunch, and whatever. They have more options. None of these things are consistent with an RV park, unless I've never seen one where they'll come in and change your bedding and do your wash for you. I just like you to keep that in mind when you're looking at this. But they are trying to create an equivalency between hotels, motels, and those types of, and cottages and lodging establishments and an RV. They're not the same. Very, very much different. The other thing I'll also point out is they're saying, oh, well, you need to update the city code because of all the changes in the business, et cetera. And they have a very nice little, what do you want to call it, study that they did. And when did they do that study? In July of 2021, which happens to have been right in the middle of the pandemic when everybody was locked down. And the only way to really go anywhere was in an RV. And at that point in time, there was a huge increase in the sales of RVs. And if you look now, a couple of years later, which I did today. RV sales are down something like 43% or something like that. So the idea that the entire world is shifting to RVs that they're presenting in their packet is a little bit self-serving. And of course, it's done by an RV, what do you want to call it, advocacy group. So when you look at this stuff, try to step back a little bit. I'm not saying anyone's, well, they are. They're blowing smoke a little bit. And the other thing is, you don't have a plot plan because they are trying to sell that land, okay? And so all the things that you give them that increase the things they can do with that property add value to them. To us, we don't get any of that. So just be careful with that. It makes it more marketable. That's a great thing, maybe. So I would keep those things in mind. And frankly, I don't see any reason why there should be a change in difference in definitions in the city development code. I think you've got plenty of definitions that are perfectly adequate. And I think what they're trying to get you to do is going to open up a can of worms that'll look like space age, only on steroids. Thanks.
Thank you. Tom Newman.
My name is Tom Newman. I live directly across the street from that tourist zone, 68996 Camp Polk Road. I don't want a RV park directly across the street from my house. It's 515 feet from my front door to that property line. It's a pretty loose definition of RV park to me. Looking at the plan that was published in the Nugget newspaper, I see 28 van stalls, Sprinter van stalls, compared to 14 actual RV stalls. The vans outnumber the RVs 2-1, and I'm seeing 10 Airstream stalls. Are these stalls going to be exclusively for Airstreams? Or are there going to be any bumper pole travel trailer allowed to park there? Are there going to be the pop-up campers with the canvas walls, small classy motorhomes? Is this only going to be held to Sprinter vans and Airstreams? Will all others be turned away? What about the light pollution? I understand Sisters has a dark sky ordinance. I'm sure that RV park will be held to that standard, just like every other business in town. But I've stayed in many RV parks where the customers have insanely bright LED lights. How will the customers be held to the dark sky regulations? I mean, they'll have porch lights and those crazy bright lights on the nose of the fifth wheel trailers. RV parks are loud, allowed customers on vacation and on party mode. Every park I've stayed in has quiet hours in the evening, but there's a few that believe that the rules don't apply to them. I run into the mentality of if you're not the loudest group at the campground, what are you even doing? Will there be someone on site 24 hours and enforce the lights and noise? I don't think it's a great idea to mix recreational with residential. Also with the light, with the noise pollution, these vans and RVs are rolling tin cans. Once the temperature hits about 65 degrees on a sunny day, they just bake in the sun. So potentially 44 RVs and vans running air conditioners and generators all day to keep cool. You know, Central Oregon's pretty hot and sunny in the summertime. And what about the stage? I mean, what's the stage gonna be used for? I saw a stage in the Nugget. I moved to the house I'm at because of the quiet country setting. We don't need a concert to live music across the street. Plus it's taken away from the downtown entertainment. How about the security? Is there going to be security 24/7? How are drunk and disorderly be handled? What are the rules that customers will be required to follow? What about the full RV hookups? Everybody's sewer smells bad. It doesn't matter if they're in a $1 million rig or a little bumper pole travel trailer. The smell lingers after dumping the black tanks. I don't want that drifting through my open windows, especially when the wind blows out of the west like it mainly does. Also, people wander. For some reason, I have people drive down my driveway and pedestrians walk down my driveway about once a week. My house is back far from the street, and it I guess it looks like a road out to the forest or maybe even a trailhead. And that's with people that live in town. Like, what's going to happen with people that aren't familiar with the area and, you know, maybe had a few drinks, they're going to start to wander. What about background checks? How am I going to know who's going to be in my front yard, you know, basically? And how, is this going to be a seasonal park? Is it going to be open year round? What's the limit for the customers to stay? Are there going to be long-term monthly guests or, you know, year-long? Is there going to be criminal background checks? I mean, I lived in an RV for 2 years to work in the system. My sister's RV park for about 6 months, and they had a pretty extensive background check. It took about a week for it to come back. So there's three other places to park RVs around Sisters. There's
which I don't mind. This one might be getting tired.
So there's three other places to park RVs around Sisters. Across the street, the movie house, Sisters Garden RV, and then there's the city park. Sprint vans don't really need an official RV park. They can park anywhere. Also, people that live in the Sprinter van are all about the minimal lifestyle. They have no interest in spending money to stay in an RV park. This is will be only attractive to people who have homes and that are on vacation. The Rodeo, Quilt, and Folk Festival, the only three weekends that will attract visitors who will use this. I saw a post on social media that people mentioned how great the views are at this property. The property has 12 to 15 foot tall aspen trees on the south and west side, which pretty much blocks the entire mountain range from being viewed from that piece of land. And then I saw food trucks. The people in the RV park won't be as inclined to leave and spend money around town if they can get their food needs met right in the park from the food trucks.
Mr. Newman?
Yes.
I'd like to remind you, we're not considering an RV park tonight. We're considering just an application to change the code. So if your comments have got anything relevant with respect to what we're doing tonight, I would love to hear them. There will be, if an application comes in for the project that you're talking about, then we'll be reviewing that, and we'll be happy to learn more about that at that point in time.
Yes. Bye-bye. My intention was just to raise questions that, you know, maybe the members haven't thought of, and maybe take that into consideration in their decision.
Right.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else from the audience that would like to talk about things that we're discussing tonight? Come on up.
Not sure, but my name is Anya Kuzma.
Can you state your address for the?
Yes, 914 East Horseback Trail, Sisters. I'm not sure about the property. I think there's three lots, right? Isn't that a historic home? And doesn't that fit into historic designation? If it does, that's a historic property. And there are some rules about historic properties, if not local, state. That's just my question.
Thank you.
I don't know how you can deny him the opportunity to comment.
In the meantime, I have someone who raised their hand online that would like to speak. Can I call on them?
Sure.
Okay. Elise Wolf, would you like to provide some comments?
Yes, thank you. Am I heard well enough? Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Can you also give your name and address for the record?
You bet. Yeah, my name is Elise Wolf. ELISEWOLF. I'm at 69700 Lake Drive in the off Camp Polk, so I'm not downtown. But so just looking at what this application is trying to do, it seems to attempt to change rules and definitions rather than requesting zone changes, which I think is inappropriate because it seems to skirt the usual process of land use changing. So that would be my biggest comment for right now. You have nothing but negative commentary about whether or not anyone wants an RV park in the middle of our sister's city. But there's also no RV parks allowed in that zone right now. So that would also need to be changed, it seems. So those are my principal comments. That is, this seems like a not very forthright attempt to change rules and zones without going through the normal processes that would probably require more public comment and more evaluation. And also, I think it's a historical building. It's a shame that the sisters can't buy the property and turn it into a museum or something more appropriate for a building that is part of our heritage. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to allow one more comment, and that's going to be from the applicant, John Skidmore.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks, folks. My name is John Skidmore. I'm here on behalf of the applicants, which is Lake House Inn, LLC. I just wanted to address a few items that were raised, save most of the conversation for a hearing at a future date, but it is not... The old Conklin bed and breakfast is not a historic structure. It's not on the historic registry. To address some of the history and why we're doing a text amendment versus a zone change, 18 years ago, I worked with the ownership group that did the entire Sun Ranch master plan. And so we worked with the county and the city to bring this particular property into the city limits. It was out in Deschutes County at that point in time. The idea with Sun Ranch was to create a mixed-use community that was, I would say, reliant on the various components of it. And so you had the residential district on the north portion where the intent was folks could live there and work in the boutique industrial park, as we were calling it. And to the point about amending specific zoning districts or creating your own, we created all those zoning districts up there. I wrote most of them. And we took your light industrial district and we X'd out specific uses because we were very concerned about the impacts on the neighbors. We were also concerned about the cohesive nature of the development. And so, you know, we didn't want the proverbial smokestacks in the industrial area because we wanted residential, we wanted commercial. And so when we came into the city through a UGB process, expansion process, the initial zoning that was put on the property was a general commercial, a highway commercial district. So that would have allowed RV parks. What we did at that point in time was to tailor the tourist commercial zoning district to a vision that the developer had. And remember, this is 2005. The Sisters was a much different place. So Five Pine, I don't think, had any cabins yet. There weren't the lodging establishments that were in place. And so what we really focused on was taking the old structure, converting that into a restaurant, potentially additional lodging facilities. And then the idea was these cottages that would be around the old ponds. A lot's happened since 2005, a great recession, pandemic, things have changed. Sisters doubled in size and more since then. And we've seen, a very ample supply of lodging facilities, traditional lodging facilities, cabins, those types of things. What the applicant, or excuse me, the owner contacted me about perhaps maybe dusting off the old tourist commercial zone, because it was, again, admittedly, very tailored to this idea of 30 cabins around a pond. We talked about the lodging facilities use in the tourist commercial zone with staff. We thought that would include the ability to do an RV park. Staff informed us that no, the interpretation we make is different. why don't you go through a text amendment process? And by the way, while we're at it, why don't we clean up the zoning district so it looks like the majority of zoning districts throughout the city of Sisters? So an example is we had pages of development standards for setbacks and lot coverage. We took all those and put them into a nice matrix. And so really shortened a lot of it. I think what we need to keep in mind moving forward is the ownership is 4.6 acres or so. This is not going to be a 4.6 acre RV park. Another item, I'll get in that in a minute, another item that keeps coming up, which is a good, and it's a big concern, this isn't going to be a manufactured home park. This isn't going to be a trailer park. This is going to be an RV park with length of stay limits, most likely of 30 days. And those are the types of conversations we're happy to have with the Planning Commission and others. Let's see where I go with the history of it. The property itself, what we wanted to do was make some uses that we listed in the old tourist commercial zone consistent with what you have in other zones throughout the city. An example would be, I think it's eating and drinking establishments is the... We had it very tailored to their idea of just dining facilities. And so really it was taking a lot of these concepts that we were very intentional at the time because we had a vision in mind that we wanted to come in and clean this up to allow the flexibility to match what you have in other commercial districts relating to things like eating and drinking establishments. So we didn't have to define exactly what that may be. One reason we wanted to do that was, could we get some food carts out there? Well, the eating and drinking establishment definition that you have in other districts allows for that. So we were just trying to kind of follow suit with some of the other definitions you have in the zoning. In terms of the RV park, again, this is not going to be a 4.6 acre RV park. There's very intentional mixed use approach to this would be having potentially some RV spaces, potentially some more traditional lodging establishments like cabins or more traditional hotel, potentially a hostel, eating and drinking establishments. We added a park use, but we've been talking about a pickleball court. We don't want to drift from the original intent of the tourist commercial zone, which is to attract visitors, attract business travelers, but also be a gathering space. We know what the bed and breakfast was, what that was for the community. Lots of weddings, lots of anniversaries, and you know, big events that people had at that facility. We still want this property to be a gathering place for the City of Sisters and the community itself, but we also need to be cognizant of a changing reality in terms of tourism and travel. And like it or not, Sprinter vans and RVs are a growing sector of tourism, and we were looking to provide flexibility so that Sisters can meet the demand of the traveling public. And I'll reference it, if you look in the application materials, the city hired Eco Northwest a few years ago to do a tourism experience survey. And one of the highlights of that survey is that people love coming to Sisters, but a lot of people can't afford to stay here. So we looked at some market conditions last summer. You're paying at least $170, $180 a night to stay at a traditional lodging facility. The complaint coming from the survey was, if there was some lower price points and ability to stay in Sisters, we would come here more often and spend more money in your local establishments. And so this RV park concept attempts to address that need. But again, we understand this is a mixed use concept we're moving forward with. So you're not going to see wall-to-wall RVs. You'll see a mixed use concept, but we need to get through this very planneristic conversation in terms of what uses are permitted before we would come back with any specific application. So happy to answer any questions you may have. That might not be the correct forum for it. We'll have a much more detailed and polished presentation for hearings, but we're willing to talk and negotiate on the various types of uses, potentially putting in additional sideboards so that we meet the intent of not having a more traditional commercial zoning district impact on the neighbors, because we've always been intentional about limiting that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any other questions, comments for staff? Okay, we're going to go ahead and move along. And any staff and commissioner comments?
Just a point of clarification on direction to staff as we kind of continue to process this. Is it the will of the commission to want to do another work session or to, and I think that as Matt pointed out, that would, the point of that would be just for continued clarification on what the proposal is. It's not an intention to deliberate. Or do you want to move into the public hearing format where you could have those more after you collect all the public comment, you close the public hearing, you can have that deliberation and start talking about the merits of the proposal, and you can refine it as you go. And if you need additional meetings, you always have that option to continue it. So I guess just want to come out of this with some your preferred direction on that to help us out.
I tend to agree with the chair about maybe needing a bit more of a definitive what's in, what's out kind of summary of the code that's changing, and maybe another work session might be worth that, but I defer to other commissioners.
I don't know. If we had a public hearing, but we're with the thought that it may be continued once some of these details get ironed out. The tricky thing is not being able to really discuss merits or anything at the same time as going through the definitions.
Is another work session going to give us anything additional than what we have in the packet tonight? You know, I mean.
Good question.
What would be in addition would be a detailed outline and presentation and discussion on the almost line by item discussion. So that would be the difference. And of course, any other additional record submittals that come in between now and then, but.
And that's only during a public hearing?
No, we could provide that as a separate work session. Okay. To really drill down into the proposal. So that certainly is.
So I guess the question is, do we want more of a detailed proposal line item by line item before or after the public hearing? Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
Well, we're going to get the detailed application proposal at the public hearing, and then there will be opportunity to ask questions then and deliberate at that point in time. It could be continued if we feel that it warrants more deliberation. It could go to a vote and potentially could be denied, which, you know, that's probably not the track the applicant wants also. So I guess my feeling is, because if this was anything but code changes, I'd be fine having it go to a public hearing. But all the other code changes that I've been affiliated with for the last decade, we've had multiple work sessions. And I realize that I understand the context here, but I personally need time to think it through and also think about what the potential consequences are of changing the language is going to be. And I want to be able to share that in a less formal setting where the procedure is not so tight. That's how I feel. But I'd rather be safe than sorry.
I'm good with that.
So you're suggesting another.
We owe it to the public to scrutinize it at the highest level.
So you're suggesting another work session before the public hearing. I guess that was my question.
I'm inclined to that. To favor doing another work session. It may be redundant, but I'd rather be redundant than rush through it.
I would agree. Okay.
We don't have to have consensus here. That's okay. So
So that would be next week, because the hearing is on the 21st.
No, I think the hearing would probably be pushed out.
Okay.
If it's the pleasure of the commission to have a separate, a subsequent work session, we can certainly accommodate that. We can work through our procedures to make sure that we are on track with appropriate notices and with regard to the hearing and those formal steps, which may involve cancel. So there's some steps that we need to perhaps even consult legal counsel, but because notice of the hearing has already been published and mailed today, which is fine, we can certainly change course, but whether it's a continuance of the hearing that's already been noticed, or if it's a cancel and then reschedule. That's just me thinking out loud on kind of my steps.
We don't have to, as a commission, make a decision after the public hearing. We could postpone making a decision and have another work session to work out the details before we make our recommendation. Yes, no?
I'll say that you don't have to make a decision that day. If a hearing's opened, it can be continued. But there's not that necessarily that opportunity to hold the public hearing, continue, and then have a intervening private work session.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way. Yeah. Once the hearing is open, a decision has to be rendered. And there's not an opportunity after that decision is made to go back and revisit it. The application has to be redone.
You guys both said something different. I thought I heard you say a decision does not have to be made right then at the public hearing. We have time to talk about it some more. But then you said
public hearing on that particular evening can be continued to another date.
Okay.
But it remains open. And
okay, so we leave the public hearing open. Okay, I get it.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Can't have a work session outside of the public
right,
hearing.
Right. Details. But no, I understand. I understand now. So we could still stay on the schedule, except we'd still have to leave the public hearing open-ended, have another work session, and have another public hearing again.
No, you can have another work session. Yeah, you can go into another, you can continue the public hearing to, and then have another public deliberation where you can discuss it further, but not a private work session in between.
So we can never have another private work session if we go into a public.
That's correct.
Okay.
Unless the decision that's made is a denial, then the applicant starts back over again if they choose, and then we go through this whole process again. And work sessions are always going to be before a hearing, and then the hearing is where the decision is made.
Right. Work session. The private shouldn't have been. Right.
Yeah.
So I think, without taking a vote or raising hands, I think the general consensus is to go ahead and have another work session and postpone the hearing. Any other items of business that folks want to discuss? Questions for staff? Staff, do you guys have any?
I don't.
Anything else?
Just wanted to just provide a quick update on our recruitment efforts. We are going to go back to council next week with a proposal for council to accept a contract, professional services contract with MIG for the MIG recruitment work. But my name is Brendan Solomon.
For the past, sorry, Annie. I'm going to start over. Good. So With council approval next Wednesday, we're looking at a commencement and a kickoff in late March of that project that is anticipated based on the applicants or the consultants' proposal would last through September 2025. So it's approximately year and a half process that we'll be going through, and you'll hear a lot about it as we get going. There'll be kickoff meetings, there'll be websites, there'll be public outreach opportunities. It's a very prescribed process from the state, but there's certainly a lot of opportunity. We want to do a lot of education in the community about what it means. And
I have a question about that, Scott.
Yeah.
The recent bill that passed about giving cities a one-time deal to do an UGB expansion, is Sisters too small to fall into that definition?
It's not the minimum acreage wasn't the size of the, well, I think there was some tiers there in terms of larger communities, how much of a UGB amendment that they could do, a one-time UGB amendment that would be somewhat more streamlined than the normal process.
Right.
And I think it's not for cities of sister size, parcels of I think 50 acres and less is the top end. And I think that got approved by the state, and it's a one-time thing. You have to prove, there's some criteria that you have to meet in order to take advantage of it other than the minimum acreage. And that's, there was some public comment about 30% of affordable housing requirement. That there's a stipulation that goes along with that particular process. So potentially it's something that could be of use to the community.
Okay, thanks.
Is that a good one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I know.
Not on the table yet.
It's not on the table yet. Correct. And then just wanted to touched on this. The next meeting, March 21st, I think, as Matt noted, I think it's noticed for 5:30 p.m. probably because it was a public hearing. So we'll get back to you on that one if we're going to re-notice it and change it, or if we're just going to open up the public hearing and propose that it's continued at 5:30. Something we'll discuss about how we're going to handle the fact that it's already been noticed, but we'll let you know. So
I have one final question pertaining to the handout that you gave us. On the table, table 2.12, on the second page, when it, way down here on the bottom of the second page, landscaping is a minimum of 10% gross site. Is that a change, or is that what's in our system right now?
We stand by. Yeah, so if we're on the second to last page, or what, strike through section 2.12.900 landscape area standards. To say it more briefly, it's the same, a minimum of 10% of the gross area of the site. So just incorporate it into a table format.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, we're adjourned. Thanks, everybody.